Today is Friday, September 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, the top 10 Democrat Party hopefuls squared off on the ABC television network last night, making their case who should be the next president.
The world needs America, but it can't be just any America.
Also ahead, New Zealand looks to further tighten its gun laws, and a month after the nuclear explosion in Russia, almost no information has been offered by authorities on what happened or if there's any radiation danger. Those stories and more are next. The 10 leading U.S. Democratic presidential candidates squared off in a spirited debate Thursday evening, trading political jabs with one another on an array of issues, but also assailing the man they want to oust from the White House in the 2020 election, Republican President Donald Trump. Joining us now in the studio with a recap is VOA national correspondent Jim Malone.
Hi, Steve.
So Jim, you know, you watched the debate. You've spoken to some analysts. Who do they feel came away, you know, with the big win last night?
The big takeaway seems to be that the situation remains about the same. That's good news for people like Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, who are both at the top, along with, to some extent, Bernie Sanders.
Who are the top three in the polls.
Yeah, that's right. And now the rest of the field, though, had their moments as well on Thursday night. So what does this all mean? I think it means we're not going to sort out the race for a while yet. It's going to stay the way it is. Biden was sharper in some ways on Thursday. He was able to go on the attack against his rivals, especially on their health care plans, mm-hmm. which he finds very costly. But he also had other moments where he meandered and then
Well,
invoked.
There was that Julian Castro bar back and forth about, you know, do you remember 2 minutes ago?
Right. Now, the question there is, does that hurt Julian Castro or hurt Joe Biden more? And we'll see. He got a lot of flack for that.
Because when you're on the debate stage, it's very difficult sometimes to hear what's going on next to one another because you have the audience. You can't necessarily hear laterally as well.
Well, here's the thing. In debates, actually, if you come across as too harsh or too mean-spirited, it will redound on you. So that's an issue. And people learn this the hard way. TV, as they say, is a cool medium. The people that, and for example, Elizabeth Warren, she didn't have a lot of breakout moments on Thursday, but she kept her cool, was very smooth, and turned in another solid debate performance. That being said, where do we get to the point where Warren or Sanders or somebody else does some real damage on Joe Biden? I don't think we're seeing that yet.
What are the analysts saying about what needs to happen in the next debate to start widening the gap between, you know, the front runners and those bringing up the rear of the pack?
Well, the next debate could be even more people in the debate. You could have more people qualify. Tom Steyer has already qualified, the environmental activist, for the next debate. So you could go back to two nights. So they're actually going, in one sense, in the wrong direction by having a potentially broader debate. I don't think the next debate maybe will change much. This is a long process. And as a lot of analysts are pointing out now, it's not going to really start to get sorted out till they start voting. And that isn't until February 3rd of 2020.
So these are the Democratic candidates. Republican President Donald Trump also is facing some challengers who have said they want to run for the Republican nomination.
Yeah, he's got three now, including William Weld, Joe Walsh, and Mark Sanford. All of them coming at Trump from various aspects within the Republican Party across the political spectrum. I'm not sure how much damage they'll be able to do. There could be some embarrassing moments at times, but it also could work to President Trump's benefit. He likes a good foil and could go after them and try to boost his own reelection prospects as well.
Jim Malone is our national correspondent. Thank you so much for stopping by the studio.
Sure.
The U.S. House Judiciary Committee approved a resolution that defines the parameters for conducting an impeachment probe into U.S. President Donald Trump. Thursday's procedural party-line vote allows the committee's chairman to designate hearings as impeachment proceedings and allows witnesses at such hearings to testify longer than usual under committee rules. The vote came as committee members grappled with confusion within the House Democratic Caucus over how to characterize the investigation. Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler talked about the committee's intentions.
This committee is engaged in an investigation that will allow us to determine whether to recommend articles of impeachment with respect to President Trump. That is what we are doing. Some call this process an impeachment inquiry. Some call it an impeachment investigation. There is no legal difference between these terms, and I no longer care to argue about the nomenclature.
My colleague Kate Pound Dawson spoke to VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson to see where things go from here.
The House Judiciary Committee Thursday morning basically voted through a resolution that expands the investigative procedures, so-called guidelines, for an inquiry that could lead to impeachment. Now, notice I'm very careful with the phrasing there because this was a topic of much discussion on Capitol Hill this past week, where a lot of Democrats were asking themselves, are we already engaged in an impeachment inquiry or are we in the investigation that could lead up to it? That's a really politically tricky question for Democrats as we go into a 2020 election year. A lot of Democrats in politically risky congressional districts don't want to commit to the idea of impeachment because they know that it's divisive and they know that it could turn off American voters. Other Democrats say that it's well past the time when President Donald Trump should be impeached for what he's done, and they want to see that happen. They want to see that movement.
What exactly are they saying they want to investigate?
There's a whole range of investigations. There are actually six Hill committees that are running investigations on the president right now. And that ranges from anywhere from President Trump's business dealings abroad to his campaign's connections with Russians during the 2016 election to emolument issues, a whole range of issues that are under different committees of jurisdiction that will eventually, if they find enough evidence, be referred to the House floor for an impeachment vote.
What is the next step expected to be?
House Judiciary Chairman Gerald Nadler said Thursday that the next step would happen as soon as next week. And that would be a series of what he termed aggressive hearings, trying to obtain some of this evidence from former White House staffers. We know that Corey Lewandowski will be called in next week and that the House committee will question him about his dealings.
And finally, how long is this process expected to take?
That is the million-dollar question on Capitol Hill. What we do know is that the U.S. Congress has about 40 days left in session in 2019. Now, that's really not a lot of time to get all of this done. And the thinking is that by the time they actually get into the new year, into 2020, they're into a presidential election season, the Iowa caucus, New Hampshire primary. All of these members of Congress will be running for re-election in their districts as well. So the thinking is that really, if something's going to get done, it needs to happen in 2019, and time is already running out.
That's VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson speaking with our own Kate Pound Dawson. Here are some other major stories from around the world. Firefighters in Brazil say the death toll in a hospital fire that forced the evacuation of patients in Rio de Janeiro has risen to at least 10. The fire department on Friday also said four firefighters were hospitalized after battling the blaze at Batam Hospital and that about 90 patients were transferred to other medical facilities. Authorities are investigating the cause of the fire. Officials say British Prime Minister Boris Johnson will hold Brexit talks with European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker in Luxembourg on Monday. There have been few signs of progress as the October 31st deadline for Britain's departure from the European Union nears. Johnson wants the Irish border provision removed from a legally binding Brexit agreement sealed by his predecessor. The EU insists the so-called Irish backstop must stay so that goods can flow smoothly between member country Ireland and Northern Ireland when it leaves along with the rest of the UK. China will lift punitive tariffs imposed on U.S. soybeans and pork in a trade war with Washington, a state news agency said on Friday, in a possible goodwill gesture ahead of negotiations. The Xinhua News Agency, citing unidentified sources, said soybeans, pork, and some other farm foods will be exempt from tariff hikes. It gave no indication whether or when purchases may resume. The Turkish, Iranian, and Russian presidents will meet in Ankara Monday to discuss Syria and the last rebel enclave in Idlib. Syrian regime forces are threatening to overrun Idlib, and Ankara is warning of a humanitarian disaster. The three-way summit is being held under the auspices of the Astana process set up to resolve the civil war in Syria. The meeting comes at the heels of UN investigators calling on countries to repatriate thousands of children and mothers associated with Islamic State fighters interned in Syria's al-Hol displacement camp. Lisa Schlein in Geneva has that part of the story.
About 70,000 people, the vast majority women and children under the age of 12, are languishing at al-Hol camp. They fled there after the Islamic State stronghold of Deir al-Zor was captured by the U.S.-led international coalition and the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces. The three-member UN Commission of Inquiry on Syria says thousands of children above the age of 12, who are considered to be of fighting age, are being held in incommunicado detention by the SDF. Commission Chairman Paolo Pinheiro says the children are being kept in a secret location with adults suspected of being fighters for IS and in conditions they may give rise to torture or ill treatment.
We find very bizarre this limit of 12. 191 member states have ratified the Convention of the Rights of the Child, and the children from 12 to 18, they are children and adolescents considered terrorists if they have more than 12 years old. The Commission finds this completely appalling.
The Commission says countries are fearful of repatriating mothers who were involved with IS militants. At the same time, it says allowing the children born of these relationships to fester in the camps would render them stateless, which violates international law. Commission member Hani Megali tells VOA, the risks of not repatriating these children will have serious consequences for them and society as a whole.
At a time when we're saying we want to not just defeat armed terrorists, but also deal with the root causes as to why people are radicalized to violence, we ought to be looking at not creating more grievances that may in the future create another generation of people who have grievances against us and against the people living in their own communities and environment.
Megali says countries should move away from policies that favor punishment for those linked with IS and move toward rehabilitation. He says people's circumstances differ, and tarring everyone with the same brush is a big mistake. He says the best solution needs to be one that allows people to go back and be dealt with in their own countries. He says Western nations have judicial systems that can cope with this. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
New Zealand's Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, introduced a new bill to Parliament Friday that aims to further tighten gun laws. As the country marks 6 months since the mass shooting in Christchurch that killed 51 Muslim worshippers. Reuters' Michelle Hennessy has more.
It's been 6 months since the gunman opened fire in Christchurch, killing 51 worshippers as they attended Friday prayers. Now, New Zealand's Prime Minister is reaffirming a commitment to tighten gun laws. On Friday, Jacinda Ardern introduced a second set of reforms after weak firearm laws were identified as a key reason why such a deadly attack was able to be carried out on New Zealand soil.
That attack exposed weaknesses in legislation which we have the power to fix. We would not be a responsible government if we did not address them.
The government had near unanimous support in Parliament when it earlier passed a law banning military-style semi-automatics. The new bill will include the creation of a registry to monitor and track every firearm legally held in New Zealand.
Today, the government has also introduced legislation into the House that will help ensure gun ownership is restricted to responsible users and stop the flow of guns into the black market.
Ardern has been cheered globally for her heartfelt support for victims, making her into an international icon for peace. But months after the attack, criticisms are beginning to mount over prolonged legal process and the handling of a government inquiry into the shooting.
That was Reuters reporter Michelle Hennessy, and this is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Did you know that you have a built-in network of biological clocks, which over a roughly 24-hour cycle regulates a variety of processes such as behavior, physiology, and metabolism? This system of clocks is usually synchronized with our body's master clock located within the brain's hypothalamus. Scientists have suspected that these individual clocks can operate independently of the master clock. To test this theory, researchers from Spain and the U.S. stopped the circadian system of specially bred mice. Then they activated individual clocks in the liver. While all the other clocks had been disabled, the researchers found that the liver continued to keep its circadian rhythm and performed its critical functions. The researchers say that their work could help scientists learn more about circadian rhythms, the aging processes, and a person's general well-being. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un have met three times since June of 2018. Now, the president says round four could happen soon, but Korea watchers are more focused on the long-delayed working-level talks. VOA's Bill Gallo has that story.
Donald Trump says he may hold a fourth meeting with Kim Jong-un by the end of the year.
They want to meet. They'd like to meet. I think it's something that will happen.
North Korea has already offered working-level talks by the end of the month, raising hopes of a more substantive phase of negotiations. The departure of Trump's hawkish national security adviser John Bolton may help, says former U.S. official Dennis Wilder.
I think that the North Koreans will be happy to see John Bolton no longer as part of the president's team. John Bolton clearly never was on board with the president's policies on Korea.
John Bolton famously referred to the Libya model for North Korea's denuclearization, an unnerving image for Pyongyang, as Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi was killed by U.S.-backed rebels after giving up his nuclear program.
You just take a look at what happened with Gaddafi. That was not a good statement to make, and it set us back.
Despite Bolton's departure, North Korea isn't likely to make the talks easy. This week, the North conducted its 10th round of short-range missile launches since May. If talks do eventually restart, the format they take will be crucial. That's because if the U.S. and North Korea are to make actual progress on a nuclear agreement, it will take nuclear experts, a meeting much more substantive than Kim and Trump shaking hands. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
The U.S. Treasury on Friday announced sanctions on three North Korean hacking groups it said were involved in the WannaCry ransomware attacks and hacking of international banks and customer accounts. It named the groups as the Lazarus Group, the Blue North Group, and the Andariel Group, and they said that they were controlled by the RGB, North Korea's primary intelligence bureau, which is already the subject to U.S. and international sanctions. A month after the nuclear explosion in the White Sea in Russia, almost no information has been offered by the Russian authorities on what happened and whether the danger of nuclear fallout persists. Activists and scientists are struggling to get answers. VOA's Yulia Savchenko reports from Moscow on the concerns that are being fueled by the secrecy.
This week marked 3 days since the mysterious nuclear incident in the north of Russia. An explosion on the nuclear testing platform Ninoxa left 7 people dead and the rest of the neighboring Severodvinsk town population wondering whether the explosion had caused a dangerous spike in radiation levels. Russian authorities kept mostly silent about the radiation levels produced by the incident and provided little detail on exactly what happened.
Tragedy that happened in the White Sea, unfortunately, took the lives of our specialists. This is a work in the military sphere, work concentrated on developing arms. We have to pay attention to this kind of work, considering the fact that new arms are now being tested by our various partners, including the United States.
After Putin's remarks, there was no further explanation for the public. Nuclear scientist Andrei Ozharovsky says the silence was in violation of Russian law.
The law says that the negative impact on the environment cannot be secret information. What we see now, we are still in a situation of lack of information. We know that from the very day of the catastrophe, that there was a spike of gamma background in Severodvinsk, in 30 kilometers from Nyonoksa, from this test site.
After the incident, the local population, left in the dark and worried about radiation, started stockpiling iodine. Memories of the Chernobyl tragedy more than three decades ago are still fresh in the minds of Russians. Observers are worried that the lessons of Chernobyl, which devastated the region for decades, might have been lost.
When we don't know what was the amount and what was the register, what was the source term of the emission, we don't know what can be protection measures. We don't know is the food safe or not. We don't know if fish and seaweeds are safe to eat. We don't know. Maybe they should inform people in Arkhangelsk, don't go for mushrooms, don't go for berries in the forest.
The German newspaper Der Spiegel reported that two people who were rushed to the hospital after the explosion at the Nyonoksa platform died of radiation sickness shortly after being admitted. Reports said hospital staff got no warnings about radiation contamination. Details continue to trickle out, none of them from official sources. Yulia Savchenko, VOA News, Moscow.
The Australian government says its support for the U.S.-led mission to protect tankers in the Persian Gulf is not to blame for the detention of two Australian travel bloggers in Iran. Phil Mercer reports they have been identified as Jolie King and Mark Firkin, a couple from Perth. King also holds a British passport and was reportedly detained 10 weeks ago near Tehran.
News of the couple's arrest and that of another British-Australian woman emerged Wednesday. The cases aren't thought to be related. The detentions come amid growing tensions between the West and Iran. King and Firkin have been travelling through Asia and the Middle East. They were documenting their adventures to thousands of followers on Instagram and YouTube, including a recent trip through Pakistan.
You might have heard of it before, but the Karakoram was built on the same path as the old Silk Route, so that's pretty cool.
It's reported the couple was arrested in Iran for flying a drone without permission. Videos filmed in other countries do contain drone footage. Their last social media post was on June 30.
We're now in Iran and we are camped on a nice hill here next to the capital, Tehran.
Tehran, we just arrived. Actually really beautiful.
Just in time for sunset.
Yeah.
A second dual British-Australian national, reported to have been jailed for 10 years on unknown charges, is understood to be an academic from Melbourne. There is speculation the woman, who hasn't been publicly identified, could have been convicted by Iran of spying. In August, Canberra said it would send a warship and surveillance aircraft to the Persian Gulf to join an international effort to combat Iran's actions in the Strait of Hormuz, one of the world's most important shipping lanes. The Australian Foreign Minister Maurice Payne doesn't believe the detentions are linked to that decision or to other political reasons.
We have no reason to think that these arrests are connected to international concern over Iran's nuclear program, United Nations sanctions or sanctions enforcement, or maritime security and the safety of civilian shipping.
Australia is advising its citizens and those with dual nationality to reconsider their need to travel to Iran due to the risk that foreigners could be randomly detained. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The young Ebola patient who took his college entrance exams while being treated in isolation has passed the demanding test to the joy of many in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where his story is now well known. Claude Maboa is among the nearly 3,000 people who have been confirmed to have Ebola in what has become the second deadliest outbreak of the virus in history. And with that, that will do it for us today.
You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, engineer Nick Ivanov, and managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, thank you so much for listening. You'll be able to find in-depth coverage of world events and news at the VOA News website. And don't forget, with our mobile application, you can download our stories and take them with you. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great weekend.